Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first season of Netflix's Lost in Space series.
Mm-hmm.
It is also available on Blu-ray and DVD, so a couple of ways to watch it. It is 10 episodes long. I think the runtime was 8.5 hours, give or take.
Sounds about right.
Somewhere in there. I'll be honest, I am familiar with the original show. Not going to say I was a huge fan of it. It was, one, before my time, and two, serious sci-fi the first season and then very comedic and almost lampoonish afterwards, from my understanding.
I never really watched it, but I know the catchphrase.
Danger, Will Robinson. And the character of Dr. Smith was kind of iconic, but also changed from a very villainous saboteur to this comedic buffoon, which was the actor's choice, and also a response to what was going on TV at the time.
Because
It was concurrent with Star Trek and Batman.
Ah, yeah.
So, familiar with it, have seen episodes and reruns, no doubt, but not a scholar on it by any means. Have watched the movie. At some point, we'll do an episode on the movie that was from, I want to say, like 10, 15 years ago, maybe.
I'm curious about the movie.
Yeah, I liked it, as I recall. It was fun. But I was curious about this one. The robot looked cool. The effects looked good. But I didn't know much more about it than that.
I was fascinated by the robot.
They did a great job on the robot. I thought their design for the Jupiter 2, or the Jupiter series ships was good. It looks like a USB drive, to be honest. Matter of fact, I've got one upstairs that looks very similar to it, which is just funny. But having that as a mobile home RV kind of plug-in shuttle to a larger craft that is colonizing another planet because Earth is becoming uninhabitable, I thought was cool.
For me, that made sense, but I wished they could have established, because we really dive right into the action at the beginning of the first episode.
Well, yeah, we're starting with, I think, them on the ship as it's about to land. You know, they're playing cards or whatever, and we've got like zero context.
Yeah.
And we wind up flashing back to why they were rushing in there to get in there and go crash land, why they were getting hit by another ship going down. It took until really the last episode to even find out for certain how well the Resolute survived.
Yes, but I wished that they had established that this was where they were living while the Resolute was in transit, as well as sort of the mobile home that they would be living in when they landed.
That was one of the many things I think they missed doing flashbacks on, because there were a number of flashbacks as to, you know, Will's getting tested to be in there. You know, the relationship between Maureen and John Robinson, you know, being a divorced couple almost now. We never got the first time they saw their Jupiter and getting kind of the sales pitch or the, and this is where you're going to be, you know, you're going to live in here. But because it was implied but never clearly stated that these are not only their living quarters on the Resolute for the journey out, but this will then detach, land, and be their home.
Yeah.
On the planet.
Well, and I guess the reason I wished they'd clarified that was they had all their stuff. It wasn't that they jumped into an escape pod.
Yeah, this was assigned to them. This was their ship. But it was unclear, did they also have quarters on the Resolute? Why did they have to go into the ship?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was, we never really saw life on the Resolute in a normal stance.
Yeah.
It was only during this emergency, as they've been attacked, it turns out, and they're crashing, that we even see the hallways of the Resolute. Matter of fact, the most I think we see of it is really when they do the flashback on the presumed Dr. Smith. The first time how she kind of takes his identity and becomes Doc Smith. And then later when we go back and get more flashbacks on how she even got onto the Resolute to begin with under false pretenses.
Yeah.
Bumped into somebody who knew who she was posing as, so kicked him out an airlock.
Yeah.
Fairly conveniently. I mean, just in the flashback stuff we've seen of this female Doc Smith, she's committed, she's arguably kidnapped two people, killed one, identity theft at least two or three times. So even if it's a all, you know, crime before leaving Earth is absolved, which it was not.
Yeah.
That only clears of like one or two crimes. And she's very manipulative and a very different take than the Dr. Smith from the show originally. Either the original saboteur version, although there's some similarities there, because she sabotages what the colonists are doing, but not out of political reason, out of looking out for herself reasons.
Yes.
And I don't know that I've watched enough of the original series to know if the original Dr. Smith was as manipulative as she is or not.
Yeah. Well, she owns the fact that she didn't pay attention, is how she phrases it, to the training and stuff like that, as her way of covering the whole she didn't go through the training.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, when she confesses that she's not Dr. Smith, she claims to be her sister, the physicist,
yep,
that she's posing as. And then in that role, she claims to have sabotaged the one Jupiter they think they have enough fuel to mm-hmm. launch off the ground. And it's kind of a, nobody believes she has the skills to do the sabotage. She claims she's done.
Well, I don't think they'd have believed anything she said at that point. She'd been lying to so many people so much.
But part of it was because she couldn't even remove parts to clean them.
Yes.
You know, the only sabotage she could have done was really yanking random wires.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's funny, her claiming to sabotage a Jupiter ship, which is exactly what the original Doc Smith did in the original series, is kind of a callback. And her name of June Harris, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
June Lockhart was one of the actresses of the original show. Jonathan Harris played Doc Smith. So, I mean, one of the other characters is named Angela for Angela Cartwright, one of the original actresses. They are being paying respect to the original series.
Bill Mummy had a brief...
He played the real Dr. Smith.
Yeah.
So little cameos like that, little callbacks, and, you know, having the chariot, having a robot, if not the robot and stuff. They're very much trying to take the original premise, update it, contemporize it,
mm-hmm.
And run it for today's sensibility. And I think they did a really good job.
Well, I think where they succeeded beyond my expectations was the robot. In terms of characterization, development, everything they did with the robot.
There are some scenes where, like, his original form that had four arms and three or four legs or whatever, clearly some CG type stuff probably, but then the use of a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
For the practical effects and stuff really sold a lot of the relationship between Will and the robot.
Yeah. Well, and doing the robot learning, evolving, developing a genuine friendship and stuff, they did some really good stuff.
Well, everything from the high five with Will at one point, and Will's like, oh that's what he's doing, and have to jump to get it. When they're in a cave and the Robinsons, Penny puts the Robinsons were here, and they do their handprints, and then the robot at night sneaks in and does his, just wanting to belong.
Yeah.
There were some of those scenes, the playing catch and things like that, that humanized the robot. And really, his lines of dialogue came down to danger Will Robinson, danger Dr. Smith, friends Will Robinson, and maybe just the word danger. I don't know that he had any other lines.
Yeah.
But was emotive with body language,
mm-hmm.
with the funky display for the face.
Yeah.
And really, what makes this show for me work was they cast a really good actor as Will.
Yes.
He was in Sense8. I'm not sure what else he's done. He's young. He hadn't had a lot of time to do much, but he's doing a terrific job here.
Yeah.
The one who plays Penny, we had seen as Mick Rory's daughter in season 5 or 6, whatever the latest season of
Legends
was that happened right after Crisis on Infinite Earths. She was in there, did a good job there. I think she's doing a better job here.
Yeah, well, better material here.
Yeah, she's got a lot more to work with and a lot more screen time.
Yes.
And Judy.
She was one of the kids on Falling Skies.
Yeah, I don't really remember her from that.
It's funny because there were one or two scenes here where she was angry but trying to hold it back, where I realized she was one of the kids that got infected with the spine.
Oh, interesting.
And it was funny because it was just a little bit of the mannerisms and stuff where I was like, I see it now.
Yeah. I couldn't tell how much older Judy was than Penny.
Judy is 18. Penny can't drive yet.
So 15, 16-ish.
Yeah.
Okay, that fits. Because there were times that Judy felt more like a kid and more like an adult and right in that in between. So that, that 18 makes sense.
Well, and I think part of that wavering, if you will, is they rushed her through medical school.
Yeah.
And so I think they were trying to do that. She was rushed into adulthood.
Well, I think all three of the kids were.
Definitely. But she's still a teenager.
Yeah.
And I really think Victor, the community leader, I mean, there were several points at which he knocked himself down a peg. And one was when he said, how many patients have you actually treated without supervision?
Oh, two. And one was your mother, kind of a thing. And very demeaning. But I also thought that Don, when after she has lost the patient, they went to great pains to try to save.
Yeah.
And she's just beside herself of what more could she have done, refers to his Dr. Robinson.
Yes.
It's like, you tried. I respect that. You have the skills. It was not your fault.
Yes. Well, and you were willing to sacrifice, personally sacrifice. You knew the fuel you needed to get off this planet and live would be lost. Now, this show is full of logic fallacies for me. I mean, it's one of those shows that we keep quoting Stephen Amell. Because he gave that great quote in a panel.
Good decisions make for bad television. Bad decisions make for good television.
Yeah.
It's a great line.
It is. It is. And the situation we're talking about right here where, okay, they had to do this 3-minute, 27-second race across a field where that's the
There's essentially geysers going up and there's a 3.5-minute gap between the sets of explosions. Yeah.
Okay, so they've got to run the gambit, if you will, in this time, and the other chariot, some hose comes loose, so Evan goes up through the roof of the vehicle, goes out, and it's almost like he's riding the hitch between the two train cars.
Yeah, they both have chariots, which are essentially SUV, ATV-type things. One of them has a trailer, which is a fuel tank, where they're getting the fuel from one of the other Jupiter ships, the one that Don had crashed on, because it had the fuel and the others didn't. They've got to race across this stuff. And at first we're thinking, okay, you've got two of these cars. One's got a trailer, one not. So lighten the load on the other one.
Which they didn't.
I would have done something to where can you get them in tandem to where they're both sharing part of the load or something. You know, if you have the first one towing the second one, maybe you can get better speed or I don't know.
I mean, you've got four passengers in the one towing, three passengers in the one not. The one towing has lots of cargo up on top of both the chariot. You could have lightened the load
and every ounce may have counted.
Yeah, and the trailer being towed. I mean, it was just so many logic fallacies. Then Evan is now on the hitch between the two trying to reconnect the hose.
He's doing kind of the MacGyver or almost Fast and Furious kind of rescue thing. Crawls out the hatch, goes to the thing, has to get the control cable between the two that had popped loose, which is bad design.
Yeah.
And plug it back in.
And then stays out there for the remaining 30 seconds, because really, what's the point in climbing back over? Which, okay, tight time frame, I kind of get it, but they're running so close on time, the geyser hits, and the next thing we know, he's trapped under the tipped-over fuel tanker.
The fuel thing has flipped over on its side, and he got under it.
Yeah.
And it's such that it's now been punctured by a rock that if they lift it up, they'll lose the fuel.
And they make no effort to figure out how to be closing that hole.
They did address the fact that it's a pressurized thing, so it's not just a cover the hole kind of a deal.
True, but it was just kind of a, we either lift it and lose everything, or we leave it and he dies.
Yeah. I think it was very much to put the community leader as the quasi-bad guy, looking out for the greater good, and really put everybody at odds. Because at this point, Judy and Don are kind of at odds, partially because of Doc Smith's manipulation, and partially because Don is a smuggler. He's not part of the colonist group. He's going to go back to Earth. He's trying to make some money. He had promised to tell them where this Jupiter was with the fuel in exchange for some money.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because Don's goals have been different. All the colonists are looking to make a new life whereas Don is still interested in money and the things that matter back on Earth.
Well, this is his life. In other words, he's not waiting for something new. He's making the best of the current situation. Mm-hmm.
He's the only crew member that made it down.
Yeah.
Because crew members don't get a seat in a Jupiter.
Well, and I'm curious because I was expecting, particularly after that bit with Judy and Don, that because Don is one of the characters from the original series, that he was going to get kind of included in the Robinson family group through her. But then when he helps John pilot a stripped down Jupiter up, of course, that plan goes awry. The interaction between those two,
mm-hmm.
I think, is essentially one of the other things that kind of, you know, would have gotten him an adopted membership into the family.
Yeah.
Now, it turns out that at the end of the season, they're all on the Jupiter 2 together anyways, so it's not like they've got anywhere else to put him.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they did a good job introducing all of the different characters, playing out how Doc Smith had given him one set of lies, another set of lies to Judy, another set to, I think it was the Watanabes or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, the first episode was all about them crashing down, trying to survive, Penny getting trapped in the ice as their thing.
Judy.
Or Judy gets trapped in the ice as their Jupiter gets submerged, the discovery of the robot. We don't even get Doc Smith until the second or third episode, same with Don and stuff. So a lot's going on, and it took a while for it to all kind of pull together,
mm-hmm.
for us to know there are other Jupiters that survived, for them to get a kind of a community of the colonists on Earth, on the planet, I mean.
And then when they get the plan to, because we can hear from the Resolute,
mm-hmm.
and hear what the Resolute's doing, so they make a plan, and they're like, how come none of the Jupiters can get a signal up to the Resolute? Maybe our signal's not strong enough. They found where some of the Resolute fell, so maybe there are parts there we can use.
Yeah, they need supplies so they can get that there, better transmitter, whatever. And then they realize the dish that they would be picking up the signal with is on the planet.
Yeah.
But I also liked when they built the signal tower to put a bright light up or whatever. That attracted the wrong kind of animal. That was a problem. That's how the robot became known to the other colonists. I mean, a lot happened in 10 episodes.
And that was very powerful too, though, because Will, in his very 11-year-old childlike perspective, had told the robot, you can't hurt anyone.
Yes. So when it's getting attacked by these animals, it's not fighting back.
Yeah. And so Will goes running out. And again, he's an 11-year-old. He doesn't think the way we adults think, because I'm sitting here telling you, he's saying the wrong things to the robot.
Oh, yeah, we're in agreement when it's be bad. No, no.
No, it's not be how you were. It's defend yourself.
Yes, defend yourself. Well, protect us from those.
Yes. Well, but at that point, they weren't being threatened by the animals. Only he was.
Yeah.
So in that case, you can defend yourself when you're being attacked viciously and torn to pieces.
I still would have been hesitant to phrase it that way, lest it defend itself from something
like Angela.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, the 11-year-old only saw it as, you can be the way I've told you to be, or you can be how you were before we met.
Yeah, I thought Will's actions throughout made sense through the eyes of a kid his age in that mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
I think they did a very good job, by and large, on the writing.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things here and there where, golly, that's convenient. But yeah, I could see where if they were designing a ship, they designed it this way for these reasons, whatever. It's funny because we spend a lot of time in a Jupiter, whether it's Jupiter 2 or one of the others. We get a sense for the hub, the control cockpit, the garage, which presumably is under the hub. But I really would have liked a better walkthrough of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see floor plans for it. It's a well-designed ship, and I think they did a good job constructing it,
mm-hmm.
and the set and all of that. But I also think that having the core cast be really the three kids and the mom, because they're the only ones that I think are in every episode.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things, going back to your floor plan thing, one of the things I wish they had established was that the parents weren't sharing a bedroom.
Yes. I would have liked to have had a better sense of who was in what bedroom where. And that, again, we never see the parents' bedroom.
Because
it took a while to realize they were getting divorced.
Yeah. Each of the three kids has a bedroom. And if we had seen the parents not sharing, you know, each of them having a bedroom, then we would have a bedroom for Don. Because now the parents have reconciled.
Yeah. It didn't even come up when Doc Smith was coming on board. But you have five bedrooms, don't you and your husband? Oh. You know,
yeah.
There's ways they could have introduced that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm liking the show. I think it's well done. There are a couple of things where I think, as with any show, they could have improved, made another pass, maybe tightened a few things up. But what I felt was missing was the flashback that established how John got
definitely
into the colony group.
Definitely.
And we may get that next season, second season. And there is going to be a third season as well.
Mm-hmm.
How John met Maureen and what happened to Maureen's first husband, Judy's father.
Yeah.
Because it took a while. It's like, how is she part of the family?
Yeah.
Without explanation.
Yeah.
And at times it was unclear where John was. Why is he not with the family? What's going on here in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And I took it to be present day Earth, give or take.
Yeah. There were, for me, it felt like there were a lot of scenes left on the cutting room floor.
Possibly.
Just kind of, you know, because there were quite a few episodes that were about an hour.
Well, and there was also one or two, like when the ship blows up and we come in the next, we get a little flashback to fill in the gaps, but there's like an hour at least of story time missing, or maybe just 20 minutes, but a key 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That I was expecting to get, you know, filled in on. And there were one or two other places where things that happen between one time we're at one location and the next time, like the waterfall.
Yes.
Could have been set up a little bit better. And I don't know. It's not like I think huge chunks of story were missing, but I think there were a couple of scenes that would have been nice to have had in addition to what we got.
Yeah.
But I'm happy with what we got. I think they found a great filming location for this stuff.
They did.
A really good cast.
Mm-hmm.
I think they had solid writing. I think the way they introduced why was the Resolute, what happened to the Resolute first, that became why was it attacked.
Mm-hmm.
We get an understanding of why it was attacked. Not all on the how.
No, the how is not there. But I think also through the flashbacks for the Christmas Star. And I think I was piecing together the Christmas Star before you were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it became clear that, okay, this isn't just a meteor, it's probably a crashed ship or something that they stole tech from. But it begs the question as to how, why. I mean, there's,
mm-hmm.
I don't expect all of that in a first season, and we got enough to move us forward.
But the other scenes that I feel we were missing was, we know Maureen was on the project. We know she was fairly high up. For instance, she says, I designed the hub.
She was a key player. She designed the hub. I think she was designing of the Jupiter stuff, which made me surprised when Penny was like, oh, I guess we can pop the things out. And how does that work? Kind of a, it's like they were watching the commercial for it. It's like, your mom designed this.
Yeah.
And she also designed the Resolute.
Yeah. And yet, she doesn't know where the power source came from and didn't have a way to find out.
Well, and they had, in some of the flashbacks, established that's above your pay grade.
Yeah.
And it's funny because when we see...
I guess my problem is this is the 24th colony group and the Christmas Star was only 2 years ago.
I'd like to know what happened to the other 23. We know some have already gone there and back.
How many have used this technology that was stolen?
Well, and how come it took until the 24th group for her family to get in?
Yeah. I mean, it just, like I said, there's more I want to know.
There's questions that can be answered once we get to the colony.
Yeah.
If we get there. But I'm also expecting to get a little bit more, since everybody that we've gotten to know other than the Robinsons and Don are now back on the Resolute. Things of what happened to the Resolute during this.
Yeah.
So I'm expecting...
But will season two only be on the Robinsons, or will we get some of the Resolute?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I'm expecting they almost start the next season on the Resolute, flashing back to kind of what the start of the crash and stuff from that perspective, gloss forward over, you know, we're orbiting, we're fixing, etc. You know, see those reports we'd heard on Earth, and cut with the present day of what just happened to them and we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if we spend most of our time with the Robinsons, cut back and forth, or what?
Well, because we had the twofold ticking clock throughout season one of we're on a dying planet, and part of why it's dying is we're by a black hole.
Yes.
So the Resolute can't really stick around.
No, but there were other ones, like near the end, when they've gotten their ship back up into to orbit. They've got the ticking clock of the Resolute's got to leave at this point. They've got an imminent threat on board that they're dealing with. They've got to rescue John and Don, who have only so much oxygen left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the ticking clock aspect is a definite aspect of this show. And yeah. That's not a problem.
Well, and we dealt with alien life forms that were drawn by light, that were drawn by sound, but mm-hmm. were blind. I mean, they toyed around with a lot of different things.
Not only life forms, but plants that were sound activated.
That was fun.
So that ecosystem just worked differently. And I don't know if we're going to end up back on that planet again, or if we're going to be spacebound for the next season.
Yeah.
Because my understanding of the first season of the TV show originally was on a particular planet. They got off it onto another one. And then for the final one, they were spacebound, planet to planet.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know that they're following that plan at all. But the other concern I've got is I don't know how much time elapsed between filming of season one, season two, and season three.
Yeah.
And three's not out yet as we record this. But with child actors.
Yes.
The will we see first season, the will we see third season could look a little different.
Yeah.
Do they do time jumps? Do they not? Don't know. There are a couple of ways to deal with
it. Yeah, interesting.
But I've been enjoying it. I think it was good sci-fi in terms of the science of and fiction of colonizing another planet, what could go wrong and whatnot, but also some good human drama, family relationship, people getting manipulated by other people and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a very easy 10 hours to watch, or 10 episodes to watch. And again, it was only like 8 or 9 hours.
Well, and early on, I told you it was reminding me of Earth 2 and Terra Nova.
Yes. The humans, the contemporary humans on another planet colonizing it under less than ideal circumstances.
Yeah.
It definitely has similarities to those. It's its own thing, but I'd be curious to go back through this season and chalk up how many Jupiters that we see get destroyed, how many chariots we see destroyed, because they go through quite a bit of equipment.
Seems like two Jupiters are definitely destroyed. The one that fell off the cliff.
The one that fell off the cliff and the one that blew up at the end. And
we lost a chariot and a tar pit.
Yep. I couldn't remember which chariot that was. It was not theirs. I think it was the Jupiter 11s.
Oh, interesting.
Because they still had theirs at the end, although it's gotten damaged.
Yeah.
I loved when it's like, oh, we can go rescue them with a chariot. And they pull off the tarp and it doesn't have the wheels on.
Some assembly required.
Yeah. And it was funny. It was cool. And again, it gave us a setup for the robotic arm they could use to put the tires on and some stuff like that that paid off later.
The robotic arm was great when Penny was trying to cheer up Will.
Yes.
I can make you fly.
And the interplay between those two I thought was awesome.
Yes.
It's funny though, because you had commented at one point when they were pulling out one of the things from one of the crates, how much foam packing they've got.
Yes. Well, because they were saying early on in one of the episodes, somebody used 14.3 ounces of their space for a bag of Oreos.
Their weight allowance.
True. But
so the foam presumably is cheap and not counting against that. But it made me think of the models that Will was building.
It made me think of just the general space allowance. You're so tight on space.
Well, that's the thing, is they weren't tight on space. They were tight on weight because you've got to lift it off.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of space. Space isn't expensive.
True, I guess. It seems to me that, I guess I'm thinking in terms of your general RV.
I think
or
this
tiny
is a
home.
Big enough. It's not a tiny home. It's a large home on wheels. The hub alone looked pretty sizable.
True. It just.
So I don't think they were tight on space. And the models, they're plastic models, they're lightweight. Yeah. But the G-force lifting off, it's like that didn't crush them or ruin them?
Apparently not.
Didn't hurt the Oreos either.
Yeah.
So that was the part that I was a little confused by the physics of. Because they did not seem to be hurting for space at all.
Yeah.
Fairly wide open, empty hub. And I was wondering at one point if they could have just gotten everybody onto a particular ship, but we don't have the fuel to lift that much weight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they did a good job, and I'm expecting, given how much we got to know the Watanabes, the Dawes family and stuff, and a couple others, that we've got to see them again.
That's what I'm hoping.
So I'm just curious how, since they've kind of diverged where certain characters are at the end, how they deal with that and how soon into the second season they reunite people.
Yeah.
And where do we end? Because I think the third season will be the final one, much like the original show. Where do they end up? Do they end up finally on the colony? back on Earth, on another planet that they've colonized.
I don't think back on Earth.
Doesn't make sense in this show.
But do they still want to make it to the colony?
In terms of character arcs? I think they're going to wind up having colonized someplace of their own choosing.
I mean, Don has some interesting lines early on when they go looking for those supplies they need of these colonists. They go to Alpha Centauri thinking that they're leaving their problems behind without even realizing they're just bringing them with them.
Yep. It's I don't want to say a hell of your own making.
Yeah.
But definitely something to learn from. You can't, there's certain things you just can't run from.
Yeah.
So I'm, like I said, I'm enjoying the show. I'm glad we watched it. I'm looking forward to watching the second season.
Yeah, so am I.
So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.